Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Our program brought to you by Hannon Home Center on Mason Drive in Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting with custom wood finishing. ShamrockPaintingCompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Wakefield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at CurtisLumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems, for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association at homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all. Online at polyconstruction.com. For real estate advice, call Ken Libby at Stowe Area Realty Group at Keller Williams Stowe, 802-793-2002. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Hey, good morning. I mean, early afternoon to everyone. This is Chris West with House Calls Vermont with my colleague, Jim Bradley.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody.
I want to just start off by thanking Joel for the brilliant introduction. He always does a fantastic
yes,
job.
He does.
This week, we're going to be talking about insulation, about, we're calling this one, Put Down the Pink.
That doesn't mean to make fun of a song artist.
No, we like, I like pink personally. I'm not going to say whether Jim likes it or not. Pink insulation, I mean, we all remember, or those of us who are slightly older, I just turned 56 last week, happy birthday to me, in between shows. I remember very clearly when the advertisements would show the Pink Panther rolling out these rolls of pink insulation, which are going to make everybody happy and comfortable.
That solves all the world's problems,
all
doesn't it?
All the world's problems. All you need is a little cartoon to make things better. However, I mean, that's such an incredibly effective marketing strategy, and you'd be surprised to know that even though you can go down to any do-it-yourself store, big box lumber store, lumberyard, and pick up your friendly colored pink insulation, it's actually got some issues with it. And let me just finish my intro, and we'll get to. We have Jim and Chelsea holding on line. We'll be right there. When we get home with that insulation and we stuff that into a cavity with the expectations that we have done what we need to do in order to get good insulation value, we're just wrong. There's so much more to consider, and fiberglass bats are not even the first best choice for an insulation.
Not at all.
No. We're going to take a break on the insulation and just jump in with Jim and Chelsea. Jim, how's it going?
It's going well, thank you. I'm glad I got the first call in because I don't want to dissuade anybody from the rest of the show. I wrote down last week your information on the domestic home air testing kit.
Uh-huh.
And I tried to get on the webpage or the site, whatever you call it, and I was unable to find it.
Oh.
Okay, so did you look up IQ Air?
No, what's that?
You know, that's the name. That's where you find that actual machine that will do the testing that we're talking about. So capital I, capital Q, then the word air all together, and you're going to find that device. Now, they do sell other products there as well, but you're going to look for the air quality tester there, and it'll be on the website. But we will also make sure we put a link on that to our website. So after the show, if you want to go there, give Chris a day or so, but we'll definitely get that up there, and you'll be able to find that pretty readily, sir.
Yeah, and you can also just, Jim, you can send us directly an email at the House Calls VT hospitalsvt@gmail.com, and I'll send you the direct link if that doesn't work for you.
So that's all one word, housecallsvt, lowercase?
Yeah, housecallsvt, any case, and @gmail.com.
Okay, thanks a lot. I'll do that.
Thank you for calling, Jim, and have a good rest of your weekend.
Yep.
You too.
All right, thank you. And so with that, you know, what Chris was alluding to is the fact that, yes, these products are out there, and there's a lot of great suppliers of those, providers of those locally, and, yes, anyone can go down and buy it. And we're not saying don't necessarily buy this thing at all. It's more so understand how you're supposed to install it, because just because you can pick it up, put it in your vehicle, take it to your garage, say it's there on site, it's not insulating there. But a lot of times the way people install it in their attics or walls or whatever – it's not really there either, because it's not performing.
There's no license required for installing insulation, and you can do a really good job not knowing what you're doing. You can do a really bad job not knowing what you're doing. We know people who really know what they're doing, and they still do a bad job, just because there are so many things with a fiberglass bat that can go wrong.
And in fact, there was one home improvement show nationally that was on, and I heard this about a year ago, and I was like, my jaw dropped on the ground, because I said, oh, please don't put that out there. And what they were telling people is to do is, hey, if there's already fiberglass insulation or some other type of insulation up there, just put another course of it perpendicular to it, and that'll solve all the world's problems once again. But
that does a lot for air sealing. Not
at all. And so you can put it up there, but it's not going to perform well. You have to be able to help the insulation do its job, and that's by allowing it to be installed in such a way it can loft warm air molecules.
And by lofting, you mean trapping.
And if you've got air running through it, it can't stop anything.
That's called wind washing. If the outside cold air, let's just think about this. You're in your attic. You're a piece of fiberglass. You're laying down there near the eaves, and you're holding on to the heat that's radiating through from inside the house, because hot air rises, but heat moves from hot to cold, right? So you're that piece of fiberglass, and you're between the joists, and all of a sudden the wind comes and blows through you and bumps out all of that warm air, and now you're full of cold air. So what's the R value of something that's, you know, 0 degrees? Well, it's not doing anything for you.
Well, it's got to, because it's stamped R19, isn't it? So if it's stamped, it's got to be performing that way.
So what is an R value? I think we should start there. R value is the resistance through heat loss. It is the inverse, or 1 over the U value. And the U value is BTUs divided by hours degree Fahrenheit square foot. So it's an area times a delta T, the difference in temperature, times the amount of time that it's in there, and all of that with a British thermal unit on top. If you reverse that, so a U value of 0.2 is the same as an R value of 5.
I've been so wrong, Chris. All these years, I thought the R value was the worth of a pirate. R value. I'm sorry.
I'm running and I'm out of here, dudes.
Anyway, but the you know, so this is really important to understand that is what the R value is with insulation. And here's a disclaimer. We have been in this for a really long time. We've tried almost every insulation out there, and we've seen the pluses, the minuses, the failures, the successes. And when we give you this information, we know that there's a whole school of thought throughout this industry of what works and what doesn't. And there's so many differing opinions out there. There's, you know, in some cases, like with vermiculite insulation that can have asbestos in it, people are trying to get rid of that and add another product in there, like fiberglass or mineral wool, but they have inherent challenges too. Or you're putting in some type of rigid board insulation, and you're saying, well, what about the global warming potential? Or what about the waste stream? What about the fact that some of those chemicals can be harmful because we have a sensitivity, you know, for our health issues inside of the building? And if you put all the spray foam in, could that cause a problem? So there's so many things you have to weigh in to how this insulation is going to perform when you're deciding the product that you're going to choose. Couple that with how is it going to perform as an assembly?
Yep.
You know, if you've got a wall system, an attic system, a basement, a foundation, what about vapor drive? What about moisture issues at the same time? What about heat transfer? What about the climate you're in? You know, we just looked at a tiny house recently that was built in Connecticut, climate zone 5. It was put up in climate zone 6, but it shouldn't have even been in climate zone 1 the way it was performing. And it was a major failure for a $70,000 investment. And this was this couple's first home. And so with that, you got to give consideration to what you're installing, what the assembly is, and where it's going to be housed. You know, the house is going to be long term before you make these final decisions.
What climate is going to be installed in.
Exactly.
So there's a term there that Jim threw out there, and he ran by it. I just want to go back there and add another term. The term is global warming potential.
Yep.
What types of materials are used, or energy is used, to make that piece of fiberglass from raw materials all the way up to you getting it in your hand? And are the things that are used in the production known to be global warming gases or materials? And that's something that we want to look at. We want to try to start using more and more materials that have lower and lower global warming potentials. And that's paired with the embodied energy. How much energy has to be put into a process to make a material? For instance, concrete, fantastic material.
Yes.
But they have to bake the Portland cement for a week at 1700 degrees Celsius just to make all of the changes chemically happen inside of that. So when you talk about the dams that they build up in Quebec, yes, once they were built, there's very little carbon to using hydroelectric power. But the amount of carbon that was actually used, or carbon dioxide that was released in making the concrete that made that dam, we'll never see that back. That's a lost or sunk loss there.
The other thing to consider along with that, because I know there's some out there will say, well, that's not as important to me because it's not in my backyard type of thing. However, here's what is in your own backyard. A lot of these products out there are plasticized insulation. They'll never decompose. They won't biodegrade. And so with that, they're going to be around a long, long time. And so how do we treat that in good stewardship? You know, we're going to be using a product. Is it going to be an assembly that's going to last? Or are we just putting a really resilient product in a bad assembly because it doesn't have proper moisture management or something like that that's going to rot out prematurely? And then you're going to be replacing everything again and throwing it right back in the waste stream. So that's where it is important to everybody as well. And with that, at the same time, I know with Chris's house, when Chris and I first got into a working relationship, we did his house. We did a full-blown energy assessment. We did a complete gut retrofit, and we used repurposed polyisocyanurate. We reused it from another building and repurposed it for his, and thus it didn't go into the waste stream, and his house performs wonderfully well. And so you can get these products pretty readily on Craigslist. The other YouTube. So you can get that on Craigslist and find this product, and you get like a truckload of it for pennies on the dollar, really, compared to what it costs new, and then keep it out of the waste stream, and yet get a huge benefit from that. So these are some of the things we want to look at when we're sourcing and choosing these type of products.
So that's very broad brushy, and we need to start broad brushy so that we can start focusing. Let's just talk about the types of insulation. There are really two types of insulation, with one that's kind of a Perry type of the other two. We have fluffy insulation, and fluffy insulation is going to be your fiberglass, your rock wool, your dense pack cellulose,
yeah.
And then you're going to have your rigid insulations, and that's going to be your XPS, which is pink or blue board extruded polystyrene. You're going to have your EPS, which is what we commonly call styrofoam, which is expanded polystyrene. And then you have polyisocyanurate, which is a rigid board as well. There are some other ones that are really out there. There's some phenolic insulations which get very high R values, but are really not very common at this point. They're brand new. They're just entering the market. But those are the rigid and the fluffy options. There are some things way out there we'll talk about in a bit. Certainly, there's straw bales. There's cork. There's wool. There's cut up blue jeans.
Denim. Yeah.
There's a product called Gutex, which is pretty much like a homosote. It's a pressed wood product.
With beeswax.
So there's which is specifically made to have very low embodied energy and very low global warming potential, and something also that we call carbon sequestering, which we'll talk about later. But let's just, we're coming up against our first break, so we'll take our first break, and then we'll come back, and we'll start talking with Steve Spatz about...
Yeah, definitely some of the changes that are coming up that went into effect just a few days ago, January 1st, 2021, in the state of Vermont, which disallows some products being used because of the global warming potential, and you need to be aware of that, and you're going to wonder when you go to your hardware stores, why isn't the pink rigid board or blue board or green board available anymore?
Right.
But there are replacements. We have Steve Spatz from Efficiency Vermont. I would say, Steve, that, you know, we got to stop meeting like this, but then it would kind of defeat the purpose of what we're trying to achieve here. So really enjoy you coming each week. And I know that we were concerned a little bit about some of the changes with insulation products available and why they're changing. And we had a great discussion about that. I would wonder if you could help our listeners out with some of that information.
Sure thing. Good to speak with you both again today.
You
gentlemen.
Too, Steve.
Excellent.
It's a very comforting topic you have today.
I feel all warm inside.
I'm just going to keep coming.
Well, after the pirate joke, that'll be fine. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. keeping it coming. So, yes, there are some changes afoot, and you know, for everyone listening in, it's a broad scale change that does affect insulation products, but it affects a lot of other product categories as well. And really, it's a kind of a mandated push to remove outdated refrigerants from the marketplace. And so refrigerants are unique materials that are used in a lot of different products, everything from your refrigerator to the heat pump that may be heating your hot water and your house, and the insulation materials that can go into your buildings. So this is kind of a national effort that's underway. Actually, it was a federal law that was, everyone anticipated going into effect, but it was halted, and now it's come down as kind of a state-by-state level of moving ahead with these regulations. So as of January 1st, all insulation products that are going to be manufactured and sold going forward in Vermont need to have these specific refrigerant materials removed from their manufacture. So mm-hmm. when it comes to making foam insulations, these refrigerants are used as a blowing agent, which is basically a factor of chemically reacting the material and creating the end product. So it affects some of that pink board, blue board that you were mentioning
yep.
At the beginning. You're right. There is a color palette change here that consumers will begin to notice at the building material suppliers. It is now gray.
Beyond blue, though, right? Beyond blue.
Wait a second. Is it gray blue because of 2020? I mean, what's...
It just got older. It got more mature, so it's silvered.
There's going to be bright, sparkly glitter put into it now. It's 2021.
All that magic.
But the manufacturer's kind of recognition of moving away from, you know, the old and moving in with the new. The product still performs the same as it has in the past, but it's just a much less global warming potential impacting product now. So
right.
It's a safer choice for the environment. But as you guys were talking about early on here too, you know, there's a broad array of insulation choices out there that runs the gamut. And, you know, when you're looking at what is the most economical choice and ecological choice, healthy choice, you know, really those choices can be varied, but making sure that they're put into an assembly that's going to be long lasting is probably the most economic and ecological choice you can make.
Definitely.
You know, as you said, you know, you put it into an assembly that's going to remain there for 100 years. That is, you know, your choice of what material you put in there and its environmental impact is not moot, but it's a much longer time frame that you're considering that in than if you build a poor assembly and those insulation materials need to be replaced in 15, 20 years, like you said. You know, then you're starting over and having that impact again. So
yeah, just a little history there. I know
think about.
Chris and I have been on so many of these energy assessments in all these older homes, ranging from the newest of homes to the oldest of homes, and finding things from a vacuous cavity with no insulation. It was using static air or mouse droppings, but, you know, from the wood...
As insulation.
The wood shavings. We found brick stacked up into assemblies
back
before. And the one that I love the most is your colleague's Jake Marin, who you found some chinking around the window trim that
now,
actually...
That was me.
No.
I found that the underwear.
No. Dreadlocks.
Oh, God.
He found out it was human hair, and it was a dreadlock that was cut off that was used to chink around a place in Burlington. So I said, if you're going to be resourceful and really put things back to purpose, I guess that's one way of doing it.
It gives you a different meaning for a hair sweater, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, boy, anyway.
Well, that's the craziest thing I ever found in my days of doing energy retrofits as far as something used as an insulation material was a pile of laundry is the best way to describe it. Sort of pulling out of a ceiling assembly, a rafter assembly, blankets, jackets, pants, coats, shirts. It was crazy.
So wait a second. That
the amount that was there.
Steve, that means that actually there is an intrinsic value to hoarding? You're saying that's a good idea?
There are ways to reuse these materials.
Exactly.
That's what we were talking about from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
So recycled materials. Reuse. We love recycled materials.
So, you know, Steve, a couple years back, I went out to California where my sister lives in the Tahoe region, and I was doing a home performance project for her. Yeah, only because I love her, because I was climbing around this attic, came out of there bruised and beaten and everything else, but I was just trying to find some of the products off the shelf, and California had already banned some of these XPS products, and all they had was EPS, and mm-hmm. I couldn't figure out why. And they were having a real supply chain issue. Knowing that the Beyond Blue product for the XPS is only being released as of January 1st, really the market in this area, do you foresee anything? Have you heard anything about some of the supply chain possible disruptions or cost changes because of availability?
Or is there a grandfather clause that allows for them, sure. you know, to sell what they have in stock? Or
yeah. So there's any material that was manufactured with the old propellants prior to January 1st of 2021 can still be sold in the state. So what we're going to end up seeing is the manufacturers and the distributors and the suppliers moving through their old stock of product. And so you're not really probably going to notice a change in continuity in what you're seeing available for the time being, since you know, they'll still be moving through what they had already manufactured. But the manufacturers themselves have those product lines up and running. They are making and producing the new compliant versions. And so over time, those will end up taking the place of the current stock. Spray foam insulation from a professional spray foam contractor. There are and have been compliant versions of those foam insulation materials available for a while now. So, you know, something to ask your contractor about, making sure that they're using compliant materials. There are some other contractor type foam products that may take a little bit longer to transition. So I think the marketplace and the supply chain is at a place where they're able to move these things forward. And I think it's just a maturation, however you want to say that, of the market.
Yep.
You know, this is old product. You know, it was these products that are now banned, they've been replaced in the marketplace already for some time. Honestly.
And
so,
if I understand correctly, Steve, with comparable R values, we're not seeing a huge shift
comparable
in
R values and costs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing, because I know with the XPS, just, you know, confirmed this morning that they're still purporting R5 per inch. And then with the spray foams, you're going with a different propellant or blowing agent. It's going to be an HFO. That is more expensive per board foot, but your R value is higher per board foot.
Right.
So it's a net wash or net gain in that. So you're not really losing any money by going with a more environmentally friendly product.
Right. And the same thing with the XPS. What I've been told so far is that the price is about the same.
Sure.
Great. That's good news. Well, Steve, again, as always, fantastic information. Throw out the web. Like I say that, like efficiencymont.com is like this complicated website to
Well,
throw
we
out
also
there.
Want to make sure that people don't call it Vermont Efficiency. It's Efficiency Vermont.
Yeah,
that's right.
Give it the plug there.
That would be efficiencyvermont.com.
like it's on the back of my hand, literally, anyway.
Good.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much, Steve.
Yeah. For those of you not paying attention.
Yeah.
No, Steve, but thanks again for your time this Saturday. We look forward to next Saturday as well.
So we're going to be moving on to get back into the finer points of these different types of insulation. I just want to throw the number out there again, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. So when we're talking about bat insulation, we're...
Bat? What is a bat?
B-A-T-T, which is a just a batten is where we get that name. It's
not the flying
base,
type. Not the flying type.
Or baseball bat. Or, so bat insulation is going to be a fluffy insulation that fits between, you know, framing members in a framed assembly.
And you just stuff it in there as hard as you can, right, Chris?
And make sure you compress it all over the place, because we know that a lack of air is what insulates. No. So we start off with a fiberglass, because that's the thing that you're going to be seeing most often. What are the things we know about fiberglass that are both good and bad? Give us the pros and cons.
Well, you know, the good thing, now granted, when it's installed and when it gets its highway mileage, I call it, or the rated R value, it's installed in the factory in a controlled environment where you have a mock-up stud wall.
For the testing.
Yeah. And then you install it perfectly inside that stud cavity with no voids. It's going to be considered a class 1 installation quality instead of a Class 2 or 3. And that Class 1's perfect. Everything's lofted in there perfectly.
Gaps.
No gaps. No gaps or cuts around any of the electrical outlets. It's perfectly filled. Then on top of that, you have a perfectly air-sealed sheetrock layer or some type of sheathing. Then they take the rating. Well, fast forward that getting into the field, especially when you put it into an attic and you throw it up there and it's not sealed on all six sides. It's not in a controlled environment like that, and air is moving through it. That can become a real issue. You also get issues when you put it in this brand new stud cavity or an old one, and there's no air sealing involved. And you've got vapor drive or bulk water moisture getting into that cavity, increasing the moisture levels. And when that hits fiberglass, fiberglass is hydrophilic.
Loves water.
It loves water, embraces water. It'll take it in, and when it does, it starts to compress, and it doesn't bounce back. And that's a problem, because even when it dries, it doesn't bounce back, and it doesn't then retain the ability to loft their warm air, the warm air molecules. So you have this cycle that happens during certain months of the year, where the first year you install it, it could be pretty close to the Class 1 installation, and it's performing close to that R value that's printed on the...
R3.3, 3.4, something like that.
Per inch. Yeah, exactly. So it could be there. But then fast forward a few years after you've gone through some heating and cooling seasons and you have a convective loop in there and you're getting moisture in there, it starts to shrink up a little bit because it's getting compressed by that moisture. It can't perform the same way. And so your R value diminishes, and thus that cycle exacerbates or accelerates, and you get more moisture in there and more of a problem. And so that's one of the reasons why we don't like it. Plus, it's a great nesting material. Now, granted, all insulation is subject to pests and rodents and everything else, because they're going to try to find a cool, dry place, food source that they can nest. But if you can have a great air-sealed assembly with the properly installed insulation, you don't have moisture issues, you don't have an air loss where they can smell food, or a heat loss where they can sense it's warmer in there than outside, they're not going to try to burrow in. And thus, that insulation is going to perform that much better. But with fiberglass, you got to be careful not to overstuff it, because when you compress it, it doesn't loft. There's some other products we're going to talk about that are more dense, and they bounce back. Fiberglass doesn't, and that's why we have some of the challenges with that. Right now, though, we do have a call from Nick in Lincoln, Vermont. And so, Nick, if you would, please, go ahead with your question.
Okay, guys. So I'm in the midst of rehabbing my mother's house, which was built in the late 60s in Vermont.
Okay.
Two by four construction with regular old fiberglass insulation. So I know that the insulation has deteriorated, obviously. So for a house of that age, what would you recommend as an approach to readdress insulation?
Good question. Well, first of all, I'd like to know, what is it, a raised ranch? Because that's pretty much all they were building then.
No.
Oh.
It's an unusual house. It's a so-called mid-century modern. It's actually sitting on concrete piers.
Ah. Very interesting.
So you have what's called a suspended floor.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. And this deep energy retrofit, where are you getting at the wall? Are you going from the inside of the house, or are you ripping the outside off?
We don't know yet.
Okay.
I've rehabbed the house to the extent that I've got someone able to live in the house.
Sure.
Heat it and keep it alive.
Okay.
And I'm going to continue with rehab process in the coming season, but we haven't really dealt with this issue at all, this issue of old insulation on a 2x4 structure.
Yep.
Okay. So with that, you know, when we look at something like this, if I were just to show up to the house, Chris and I were to show up to the house, we're going to look at a lot of different variables here. One of those is going to be the wallet tolerance of the individual. Like, how much money do you want to...
I was going to say, where's the wallet
in
the house?
What's in your wallet? Literally, because how much money you got? Because it's not about us making money, but it's how much you want to invest. And that's the tolerance point. Because... And not to disparage any car manufacturers here, you could start off with, you know, a really poorly performing jalopy, or you could end up going with a Volkswagen approach or a Cadillac or a Ferrari. It depends on where you want to go with this. And so you can do a gut rehab where you can actually take it down to the studs in one direction or both. That means either you start from the outside because there might be a compelling reason to do so, like the siding's in bad condition. And if the siding's in bad condition, the windows are in bad condition, and they're not as serviceable, like the military says, clean, dry, and serviceable. If it's not in that state, then you may want to look at doing some other work there. So we look for, are there any compelling reasons that would point us into a different approach? So with that, we look at that. And then we let's say we're taking off the siding, and then we're getting into that wall cavity. That way we can inspect the quality of the insulation, see if there's been any damage to the wiring by rodents, and then at that point in time, too, develop a strategy as far as providing a really good vapor control plane, also an air sealing plane, to allow any insulation we put in there to perform well. Then we look at the fact of here comes that tolerance level. We could just refill the existing cavity and stop there, and that's just called cavity insulation, or insulation. And with that cavity insulation, you have to understand that wood framing, when you stuff a cavity full of insulation or insulate it with insulation correctly, the wood framing on the side of a traditional 16-inch cavity or 2-foot cavity will diminish the R value of that whole assembly by up to 1/3 of its value. And so
through thermal bridging of the wood.
Yeah, because the wood is a terrible insulator.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so with that, we lost everything.
Keep going. Keep talking.
Oh, okay. Sorry. We just lost all of our sound here, but hopefully you can hear us. But with that, what we're looking at is when you have that assembly, the way you stop that thermal bridging is that you're going to be able to have what's called a thermal break. And that's what you do is you put the insulation on the outside of the wall as well. So not only do you have the cavity insulation, but you have up to 3 inches, maybe more sometimes, on the outside of the framing that stops that thermal bridging, and thus you get a higher R value of the total assembly. And then on top of that, you put what's called a good vapor control layer. You put a rain screen on there that will allow for water shedding, and then you put the siding. That's really going, you know, really far into the retrofit, and that would really help you make a better assembly. But it's really having an assessment done first and foremost, seeing what some of the problems are. I would also look at that floor system that you have there and see if the floor system needs improvement. And if it does, then you could possibly do something along that line as well.
What do you think about?
Just so everybody knows, we have lost our sound system, so I cannot hear the caller anymore.
So what we're going to do, Nick, is we're going to ask you to hold on just a second, see if we can fix that. We're going to get back to just talking about what we can hear, which is the insulation. And if for some reason we're unable to continue with your call, Nick, please send us the email so that we can get in touch with you.
For a good follow-up,
and
sure.
Give you a good follow-up and finish this conversation. Okay, we're back, and our sound is back. Nick, thank you for your patience on that. So
can you hear me now?
We can hear you just fine. Thank you so much.
So I just had a quick follow-up question.
Sure thing.
Short questions. Number one, regarding the method that you just described.
Yes.
Is there a ballpark figure per square foot that one might think of for that method? And number two.
Yep.
What would you recommend to install fresh insulation under the floor of the suspended building that sits on piers?
It's a great question. First of all, it's really hard for us to give you a ballpark number without getting eyes on exactly what would be happening.
And it depends on how far you want to go with it, too, because once again, if it went all the way, I've seen as much as $65 a square foot, but that's the whole entire assembly plus others. And material prices, even in the last month, have gone up 20%. So that's a hard one, too. And once again, we just lost our sound, but we'll finish up with that. But as far as the floor system goes, that's a great question because so many times we see these floor systems done incorrectly. What you'll have is sometimes fiberglass insulation or something else up into the floor system, and then rodents say thank you very much, and they'll go ahead and nest
in there. Often with like a PT on the bottom. So what we're really looking for on any of these deep energy retrofits is creating a good thermal break. So what we want to do on those on the piers, on the floor under the piers, on a garage ceiling, under a bonus room, it's all the same type of thing. What we want to do is we want to make sure that we have a good installation of fluffy insulation between the bats, or if we're going to go spray foam, not a big fan myself, but if you're to do that, and then add a certain amount of rigid insulation below that. And in our climate, that should be 50% of the R value.
For
the thermal break.
But also that rigid insulation can serve as your rodent barrier as well.
Yep. So we would recommend you sending us an email to housecallsvt@gmail.com. And depending on how the discussion goes, I'd like to come and take a look at the project and give you some advice beforehand. And that would require us coming down and before you do a project like that, it's always a good idea to get an energy assessment, also called an energy audit, on your house. So know where you're at now and where you're going to be, and then you can get some of the subsidy money that's available through Efficiency Vermont or the state, depending on who your provider is for electricity. And so that's our advice. Please give us a call, not a call, but drop an email, and if we can hear what's going on, we'll continue taking calls. Until we do, though, we're going to just dive back into our discussion. Oh.
Well, geez, it just came back. This is a fun day because when you're on radio, what keeps happening is it keeps dropping in and out. So you hear yourself and then you don't, and then it's just kind of a strange experience.
Forgive us for our lack of, we're getting a little discombobulated. We've got Pete in Barrie who's calling up. Pete, let us know what you're calling about.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm calling, since your discussion has to do with insulation. We had an energy audit about 10 or 15 years ago, and actually they were rather surprised that the house was as tight as it is. Mm-hmm. They said if it were any tighter, they'd recommend an air exchanger type thing.
Ventilation, yep.
Yeah, and but one of their recommendations, we have soffit vents and we have ridge vents. And one of their recommendations was to pull the insulation out of the soffit area and put in foam insulation, consequently blocking up that soffit vent.
Yeah, sorry.
And I've always been under the impression that you want a nice air circulation over that sheathing.
Yep.
To keep everything dry.
You're
so
absolutely
I'll get
right.
off the line and
sure.
wait.
No,
we
Hold on a second, Pete.
So the follow-up question is, and I don't want you to say the name of the company on air. I mean, it was 15 years ago, and things have changed significantly. But you're absolutely right. Your gut reaction was spot on. If we have a soffit and ridge venting system, if you block that off, you're destroying the venting and will create durability issues. You have a buildup of moisture and all of that. So you're absolutely right. I'm really happy that you had that gut feeling.
But with that, I would also say, Pete, is the fact that when doing something like this, even though the house is tight, in fact, when I had to retest the first round after being certified in this years ago, I was out there and the proctor of the test, he was shocked as I was when we had this house that was built in the 70s. We kept checking our test equipment, and I got another piece of test equipment, and then he got his because we couldn't believe the numbers that it was so tight for this old of a house because people weren't really paying attention to air sealing at that point. But it is possible by default that somebody did get it better than they expected. That being said, still doing the blower door test, still looking for leaks, and addressing things in the attic because there's still some air leaking into the attics. With that, you want to make it as tight as possible, but yet ventilated appropriately so that you have the indoor air quality addressed. And I would visit again whether or not you do, even at this point, still should consider something like indoor air quality improvements by a retrofit ventilation system, like a Luno system, like a Zinder system or something like that, because the building health is important, but also your health is important and getting that done. But also in the attic, making sure that the air sealing's done, the insulation's correct, is still a great approach because you still have some room for improvement there. But stop sealing off the soffits. That's
Don't let them do that. And Pete, have you signed up for our indoor air quality monitoring survey?
No, I haven't.
Okay, if you send me an email to housecallsvt@gmail.com, and if you're interested, because I'd like to know what's going on with the indoor air quality in your house. If it's your house is that tight, I'd really like to know what's going on there. If you send us that information, we'll put you on the list, and as soon as we get that unit, we're going to get in touch with everybody and distribute that, and everybody will have it for a week, and we'll compare results. Does that sound like an idea?
That's a good idea. I neglected to tell you that what all this audit, energy audit, occurred after I'd put more insulation in the attic and that sort of thing.
Sure.
Okay.
But what the attic had when we first moved in, the house was built in 91.
Okay.
And it had 6 inches of blown-in insulation.
Sure.
To that, I added 6 inches of fiberglass.
Okay.
Unbacked, unfaced.
Sure.
In all these cases, it's unfaced that I'm speaking of.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then to that, crossways of that, because even though the trusses are approximately 2 feet on center, sometimes yes, sometimes no, to that crossways, I added another 4 inches of fiberglass.
Mm-hmm.
And then to that, I added another 6 inches.
So you've got basically a series of woven layers of fiberglass bats on top of an original layer of 6 inches of cellulose.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so in most cases, Pete, I would not recommend that assembly to customers. I want to be as diplomatic as possible here because I know you've done some, you put some good investment there. I understand that. But the whole component of first and foremost air seal. I used to back in the day be willing to salvage as much insulation as I could that was existing and repurpose it if possible. But I found that, like, let's say you had fiberglass first and not the cellulose. And then you put, and you, if you did air seal and then put the fiberglass down, afterwards, you do an infrared camera scan after you did all this great work, and you still see these cold anomalies in because the fiberglass does not always come in contact with the substrate of the drywall the way it's supposed to. So normally what I'm doing at this point in time, in fact, probably 99.9% of the time, unless there's some other reason, I'm recommending that all the fiberglass comes out. Yes, the cellulose can remain. You can do the comprehensive air sealing and then put the cellulose, you know, redistribute it and then add to that. Because adding cellulose, it's like, you know, snow, if you will. It fills all in all. The fiberglass can have so many different voids in it, and it's an area where the mice just love to crawl through. Now, with cellulose, it has a borate, or you could say borax, mixed in with it as a fire retardant, but it also is not friendly to insects, and it's not friendly to mice. And so right there, the cellulose becomes a more attractive type solution in that situation. And, you know, we've seen this before. We've done a lot of work. But if I came out there today and did an assessment, I would do whatever I could to have the fiberglass, convince you that the fiberglass comes out. We do the comprehensive air sealing and add all the cellulose afterwards. But it is there. Hopefully it's performing well for you, and you already had a tight house. So you also have to look at the presenting issues at the same time.
Right.
I would first and foremost be more concerned about your health and safety, not that there's some kind of alarm going off saying, oh, gosh, there's something wrong. But just look at the indoor air quality, like Chris said, and let's start there and see if that's something worth addressing at this point in time for you.
As a follow-up comment, I was considering having cellulose put over the top layer of fiberglass just to take care of that air sealing, because I do have gaps.
Yeah. Yeah, so fiberglass is not an air sealer. It has a slight, it'll slow down if it's well compacted, but it itself is not. We have really well documented science that shows even convective loops inside of dense packed cellulose walls. So it's the air sealing should be done using something other than cellulose.
And I'll remind our listeners that had been listening in weeks previously, and this is a great thing for you to consider too, Pete, is that when we did Chris's house, and I've done others like this as well, we took out all the insulation on a day that was like 17 degrees, 18 degrees, did all the comprehensive air sealing, and his family remarked for the first time their heads were warm, and they couldn't believe it. That was just with air sealing alone and no insulation. So not doing the air sealing will affect the performance, and just adding more on top of it, you're just putting more money up in that attic, and it's not yielding you the benefits that you're really looking for. So that's where I would go to start. But I would go ahead and, you know, send your email in to us and on the website, and let's get you signed up for the indoor air quality test for sure.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank
sure
you.
Thing. And so at this point in time, you know,
I'm going to jump in because I'm just going to step back up. We were talking about fiberglass, and the thing we were saying about fiberglass is it's really hard to get that class one installation. So there's something called the installation insulation. So you install your insulation a certain way, and bat insulation has three classes, 1, 2, and 3. 1 is the best with no compression and almost no gaps along the edge of the insulation. 2 is up to a quarter inch gap and some compression, and 3 is, you know, up more than a quarter inch of gaps on the side and lots of compression. If you have a class 3 insulation with fiberglass, you're only getting about half of your R value out of that, and that is something we want to avoid. So the next insulation that we would recommend looking at, or would look at in the bats, is that rock wool. This is a much denser material. It's a great material. It's made with a mixture of recycled and non-recycled materials. It's main ingredient is the slag from the steel making industry, so that's recycled.
And basalt rock.
And basalt rock. And it has a slightly higher R value, but most importantly, it springs back when you are compressing it. So you can actually squeeze it, push it into a stud wall, a stud bay, and it will spring back. So it's easier to get that high quality class one or even a good class two installation.
It's also, the great thing about it is it's hydrophobic. So conversely, fiberglass is hydrophilic, water loving. Hydrophobic is water rejecting. And so what happens is if it does get moist, it'll actually reject the water and it's not going to hold that water in. And its drying potential is greatly increased. And after it gets wet, then it can actually dry back out and then it's going to retain its shape. And so it's going to retain its R value. That's why that one's so much of a benefit. And we're going to get back to some of these insulation types. And as Chris and I talked about before the show, there's a lot of information here. It's going to start, engender a lot of questions. And so we will be continuing on with this. But right now, we do have a call from Richard in Williamstown, Vermont. Richard, please go ahead with your question. How can we help you?
Okay, putting a room in a cellar. Part of this one wall is partially exposed with 2-inch foam and a 1/2-inch plywood on the outside. The other wall is pretty much buried on the exterior. What's the best insulation, and do I want to put a vapor barrier in? Well, what I was planning on is fiberglass bats. I was questioning whether to put a plastic vapor barrier or just a sheetrock over it.
Good question. So basements we have to be very careful with because obviously there is a lot of moisture in the outside of a basement wall, and no matter what you make your basement wall out of, moisture is migrating through that in some way. So we do want to make sure we're being very careful about where we're putting our vapor barrier, making sure that we're dealing with a dry basement. And so your questions are very pertinent. I would say, first of all, go to our YouTube channel. If you go and search on a Google search, House Calls Vermont, YouTube, it'll come up. We have a series of instructional videos, and I have a 7-minute instructional video that is specifically about insulating a basement wall. That being said, we want to make sure we're not getting bulk water through that wall, right?
Exactly.
No bulk water coming through the wall at all.
No visible water coming through the wall.
That's perfect.
Sure.
Do you have any effervescence?
Salting, white chalking?
Yeah, on the inside of the wall?
Do I have any what?
It's called efflorescence, and it's basically some of the salts from the groundwater and stuff. They will get deposited on the inside of the concrete.
Looks like a white powder.
Yeah.
No.
Okay,
no.
Good. That's good news. So here's what we'd recommend. You start by putting a vapor barrier on the wall, either a sheet vapor barrier or using a rigid insulation like a 3-inch Thermax as your first and best insulation against that wall. And that should be installed on the wall using physical attachment. You use something, a Hilti fastener for that, which you drill a hole and then you it's kind of like a mushroom-shaped plug and you hammer that in with a hammer. That's where we'd start. What kind of wall is it?
What I'm putting in or what's there?
So what's there?
I've got the bare concrete wall.
Okay.
Poured concrete.
Perfect.
Okay, great.
So that's a good way to move forward. A 3-inch rigid polyiso that has a vapor barrier on the front and back is a good way to go. Get that affixed on there using these Hilti fasteners or something like it. And then you can build yourself a frame wall inside if you want to finish it with fiberglass and sheetrock.
As far as that other wall that's above grade that you said had plywood on the outside and 2-inch rigid on the inside,
two inch rigid and the plywood is on the outside.
So okay. Inside you're looking at then bare frame.
Inside is just at this moment is just concrete.
Okay, so you put the plywood outside like an exterior grade as a protectant for the actual rigid insulation, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Perfect. So yeah, that's a good measure because it is going to stop the cold transfer chasing in. And then on the inside, certainly what Chris said, you can do the Thermax. The reason why you recommend a Thermax is if you're not going to put sheetrock up, because when you put this type of plasticized insulation, whether it's XPS, EPS, whatever, you have to have some kind of fire retardant over the front of it, a thermal barrier as well. And so that's the basically the Thermax is a rated material like that, and it will suffice. And you have to make sure you're ending R value by Arby's code, the Residential Building Energy Standard, for a basement wall that has not been insulated previously, has an R value of R15. And the 2.5-inch rigid insulation from Thermax will do that. There's another product. It's an EPS-based product. It's called Nudura, N-U-D-U-R-A. That is, it can come in a 3 7/8 thickness, and it has embedded framing in the insulation. The nice thing about it is it runs about $59 a sheet, and the Thermax runs about $68 a sheet. So if you are going to clad it with sheetrock and you don't want a frame in front of it, you can use this product, attach it with concrete fasteners to your concrete, and then have a place where you can sheetrock in front of it, and then
without building another
wall.
Frame wall.
Exactly. So there's another solution.
It has what's called a nailing base embedded
exactly.
in the EPS.
Yep. So that's what we recommend at this point in time, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Richard, thanks for calling.
You're very welcome. We are down to the last 4 minutes of the show,
so we're
just going to quickly talk about our last fluffy insulation. Our last fluffy insulation is cellulose. So cellulose, of course, about our 3.5 to 3.8.
We're going to be diverted here, Chris. I told you this is going to take 2 weeks at least.
At least 2 weeks. So we've got Rich in Starksboro. How's it going, Rich?
Oh, good. Sounds like a guy before me's name, Rich or Richard or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Richard in Williamstown.
I have to apologize. I was just on the phone with something I bought from the Trading Post program that came on at 8 o'clock this morning. I've been kind of missing a lot of your show, but I was wondering if you could answer this one question for me. And maybe you've already answered it, and I do apologize.
That's okay. Go ahead.
But I've got an addition on my house that's in the stud, inside of the stud pockets are still open. Wiring's not in. None of that stuff yet. Could you tell me there's 16 on center 2x4s?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
3.5 inch finish thickness. Can you tell me what the best thing is I should put in there?
What's on the outside of your addition right now, Rich?
1/2 inch plywood.
And do you have it sided yet?
Nope.
Okay.
I got Typar that's been on so long that it's not on.
Now in Vermont, you're going to have to get a historic preservation variance to put any siding over it because it's been on too long, right?
Yeah. Right. So, Rich, one of the things that you need to keep in mind is that you need to insulate that wall to the minimum RB standard,
yes.
The Residential Building Energy Standard, which right now is an R25. And so just say high-density fiberglass or rock wool in between the studs is fine, or a dense pack size. The bats are easier to use for you as a DIYer, so if you're going to do it yourself, I'd say use bats. On the outside, however, we'd want to add at least an R15 or R12
Agreed.
Of a rigid insulation board, and that can be the XPS or the EPS. If you did 3 inches of a blue board, you'd be there. Once again, if you go into Craigslist and look up used insulation, you can also find used insulation, which is going to be saving it from going into a landfill. Right now we have
Basically, if you do that, what Chris is saying, this is the time to get it right, because you're definitely at the right time.
Yep.
You got your cavity opened up. You got the siding opened up. And once you put that rigid
windows,
on...
My windows are all in. How
that's okay. That's okay. So
3 inches past my window.
Yep, that's fine, because what you do is an exterior extension jam. So you would be doing that on the interior anyway. So in this case, you would do an exterior extension jam, and that will bridge
on
that gap.
On top of my brick mold?
No, the brick mold would have to be come off,
yep.
But that's a small ask.
That's Marvin, I got. I know last time you said copper... Not copper clad, but aluminum clad is not a very good thing.
Well, it's known to have some issues.
Clad.
Yep.
And so with that, you know, if the brick mold's factory applied, then that could be a little bit more of a challenge. You want to take a look at that. But if it's not, and you can remove that brick mold and then build the extension jam and then reinstall the brick mold on top of that, you can get the rigid insulation out there. It is possible that you go ahead and build inward with rigid insulation as well. But as Chris alluded to, the Arby's code states that you're going to have to hit the minimum R values for that cavity, and doing that with a traditional fiberglass or a Roxul or a dense pack cellulose isn't going to get you there to that minimum standard.
With a 2x4 wall,
With a 2x4, you would have to do something else.
Do I have to
Yep.
You have to follow that stuff, even if my building permit's a 1997 building permit.
Yeah, because it's being finished now. But granted, you're the homeowner, and the homeowner, if you're not contracting it out, you have some leeway there. But if you are contracting it out, you do have to follow the Arby's code, and that's what we have to recommend you doing.
Yeah, and what you do in the privacy of your home afterwards is up to you. But we're going to give you the advice that follows the state law.
Should you have any further questions on this, Rich?
Because we're right up at the end of the show. We're sorry,
and just give us.
Joel won't mind.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, he's shaking his head. You're absolutely right. So here's what I recommend, Rich. If you would just send us an email at that housecallsvermont@gmail.com, vt@gmail.com, we'll be able to go more in depth on what we recommend and maybe share some photos with you and give you good
advice. Because that will help, because a lot of times in the translation, something gets missed. So being able to show you some of the assemblies, it'll give you a better idea and confidence that, this is the right way to go for sure.
Okay. High density fiberglass, though, is that something that doesn't roll up? That's like it stacks or.
Yes. It would come in a stack just like, it wouldn't come in a roll.
It exactly.
Come
in
a stack. It doesn't roll up. It's too stiff to roll up.
Exactly. And too thick.
Gotcha.
Okay. Thank you so much, Rich. And also, we're going a little bit over, but we do have maybe a return call or maybe just a different Jim in Chelsea. Go ahead with your call, sir.
No, it's the same one. I've been doing my best to get on into your email and send you an email about this home testing a deal that you were offering last week, and I just can't get through.
Okay, well, let's do this. Why don't you go ahead on air? Not on air. Let's see if you can give Joel off air your email address or your phone number, and we'll contact you because we don't want you to be flooded with a bunch of spam.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you'll do that, and then we'll make sure that we make contact for sure. And we are also going to check the email just to make sure everything's going through.
Yep.
So I should call right back and ask Joel?
Just hold on the line. You don't have to call back. He'll pick up as soon as we're off the air, you can get us that information.
Yep.
And thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Jim.
And so with this, Chris,
didn't even get a third of the way through.
No, not even a third. But this is a big topic, and that's like we said when we started this thing. There's just so many different opinions out there, so many different type of products. I was going to say this at the front end of the show. Here's what's important overall. Yes, there's so many types you can use. It's about knowing the assembly, knowing the climate that you're installing this in, knowing what you're looking to achieve, addressing, once again, you've heard this before, the house as a system, dealing with vapor drive, bulk water moisture, so you can make a really long-lasting, resilient assembly that is healthy at the same time. But also with that, as Chris West, my colleague here, says, because people would complain, well, 10 years ago, you told us to do this. 10 years before that, you told us to do this. What we're saying to do that will last throughout the generations going forward is, whatever assembly you construct, make sure it has the potential to dry. Because if it stays dry, it stays durable. If it stays durable, it stays healthy, and your investment is protected.
That's right.
That's the number one foundation that we have to remember as we're going forward. But for now, we thank you so much for joining us on the program this week. Been very enjoyable for me.
It seems pretty clear like we're going to have insulation part 2 and maybe even part 3. So stay tuned next week. And in the meantime, if you are interested in taking part in our indoor air quality survey, send us an email at that housecallsvt@gmail.com. Look up our YouTube channel by going and doing a Google search on House Calls Vermont YouTube. And like and subscribe. We've got instructional videos there and videos from past shows. And until next week, this is Chris West.
And this is Jim Bradley with House Calls Vermont. Enjoy the day.
House Calls Vermont, brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury, Shamrock Painting, Painting and Custom Wood Finishing, ShamrockPaintingCompany.com, RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield, Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber. There's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. By Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems for all things basement-y. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Radio and Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association at homebuildersvt.com. And Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com. And by Ken Libby at Stowe Area Realty Group at Keller Williams Stowe, 802-793-2002. Do join us again next Saturday at 12:30 during the noon hour for House Calls Vermont.